Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. I'm your host, Alpha Muhammad II. I'll be here on the air today with Imam Yusuf Salam monitoring the program. Sorry for the tardiness and lateness, but Imam Yusuf Salam, are you there? We just had him on. He's on the studio, but I can't. He's not. Can't hear his voice. Imam Yusuf Salam, are you there? Imam Yusuf Salam? I'm going to call him and see if he could call in. I don't believe I'm on mute. Imam Yusuf Salam?
Yes, I'm on the line. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
I was trying to say, and I hope we're not live for the audience, that I came prepared as usual on Friday to do an interview format. Are you prepared to serve as the interview host? I'm not prepared to do an hour-long lecture today.
Oh, okay.
Me and your father, we've been doing interviews, and I mean, I could shoot from the hip for an hour, but I don't think that's the best use of our time today.
Okay, because usually when I do interviews, I usually prepare questions. But, I mean, he told me about an interview, but he didn't tell me, like, you know, really, like, what I was supposed to do regarding, and like, you know, in that regard. So, I mean,
we got a show to do. You're an intelligent young man, and you familiar with some of the current events. And just do your best and ask some questions, and I'll try to field them.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let me just get my...
Because one question will lead to another.
Yeah, yeah.
So it shouldn't be that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't be that difficult. I mean, just...
Like, all right, well, I'm going to ask some questions.
I've heard you talk before. You are an intelligent young man. You understand the world, and you've been keeping up. So you can frame some basic questions to get us through the hour, I'm sure.
Okay. All right. Well, this week, as you know, the British exit from the European Union. But I just wanted to have your take on that, and you know, if so, can you draw some comparisons between the rhetoric that drove the British to exit, which was, I mean, some of the rhetoric was xenophobic, to the rhetoric over here in the United States in this year's election? Because I know you know a little bit about politics. So if you can draw some comparisons between the British exit from the European Union and the, you know, and the 2016 elections, can you just shed some light on that?
Certainly, and the question came up last week, and I think that as we mature and move more and more into the serious world of politics, and in this case, international governance, we should be hesitant to throw out opinions when the facts are not all in. Last week, the facts were not in, but now the facts are in, and it appears that the majority of population in Great Britain, the United Kingdom, made an impulsive decision to leave the EU, and after that decision was made, and the consequences were manifested, they got buyer's remorse, and many now regret the challenge that they face in terms of trying to keep the economy of Great Britain viable. The other countries in the European Union, they'll manage to make it. There'll be some temporary disequilibrium. United States, you see, our market, the bottom dropped out. The global economy lost $3 trillion in a couple of days, and our stock market had a blatant dip. Now it's lost about 900 points, I think, in 2 days. Now it's regained over 800 of those points. So the rest of the world is becoming somewhat stable, but Britain, the United Kingdom, the people who made the decision, they're not in a good situation. Even on the level of leadership, they've given a vote of lack of confidence in the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn. The Prime Minister, David Cameron, has resigned. And this fella talking all that rhetoric like Donald Trump, he ends up having to drop out because the people understand that that kind of rhetoric is going to lead a Britain off of a cliff. So, in a way, that's a good blessing for America. We can see the disaster for what can happen following that kind of Trumpian rhetoric. And so we should do like the British finally woke up and did. Let this guy know, look, you'll never be the new prime minister. Take a hike. We need to tell Donald Trump the same thing in the voting booth.
So now back to United States politics and somewhat British politics as well. Do you see the same? Do you think the citizens over here in the United States will wake up regarding this? You know, the rhetoric and the speech of Donald Trump. But do you see an election or the election, like the actual campaign playing out in this regard? Because we've already seen that many business leaders, because one thing about business leaders is they tend to have a major influence on politics, as we saw with the whole British-European incident, and they've already been expressing their, discontent with the whole, fabric of the United States election. So do you think that the United States citizens will wake up in time? As President Obama said, he said, I have faith in the American people. But do you believe that they will wake up, or do you think it'll just eventually just run its course?
Well, let me just say something about the difference when it comes to voting and demographics. I think England is about, Great Britain is about 15% minority. In America, you have a different situation. You have a large minority population, African Americans, Asian Americans, Latinos, and others. You have single women as another demographic variables. So the voting dynamics are different in America than they are in Great Britain. Now, there's nothing in the polls to suggest that Donald Trump has ever influenced over 40% of the American people. The polls are all over everywhere. Last night, a poll came out showing Hillary Clinton 11 points up nationally, but more importantly, she's leading in double digits in several of the two or three of the battleground states, and in high single digits in some of the rest. The contest is only tight in one or so swing states, which means that the election is going to turn on the Electoral College. And if those results, if those indications hold up, then the majority of people in this country are not buying his rhetoric, and he'll never be president of the United States.
Okay, yeah. I kind of feel the same way. But, I mean, for it to even go that far to the Electoral College is pretty amazing. And, you know, someone who was talking like the way Mr. Trump was talking, the Trump Organization, the way he was talking, it, you know, the whole campaign or elections of going to the Electoral College in itself should really, you know, speak volumes as to this, you know, silent majority that, you know, was silent for years within the United States. So my third question to you is, do you believe that this rhetoric, and I mean, many people call it racism, but do you believe a lot of it is a backlash to President Obama, or is it more so just a backlash of years and years of neoliberalism that has been taking place within our politics here in the United States?
I think it's, first of all, without a doubt, a super backlash to President Obama. There's no doubt in my mind, and we could go on and on and on documenting that general assertion. Now, the other part of the backlash is not due to a backlash to neoliberalism, in my opinion. It's a backlash due to the fact that a large segment of the Caucasian population in America, especially the Trump supporters, they are very insecure in their survival and their status as a white supremacist entity. And they are reacting out of a sense of panic to the fact that this new brown America may not leave a place for them. And Trump is very skillfully and tactfully exploiting those kinds of fears. And there's an article out today where you see, since he's been campaigning, there's been a big uptick in people in the Ku Klux Klan. People say he's not racist, he doesn't mean it, he's just saying something to get elected. But the people out there in the country, they believe him. And as this article suggested, they think that now there is an atmosphere, because he's received the Republican presumptive nomination, that they can thrive again, that they can be nourished in this new environment, and they can do their thing. Now, this is happening before he's elected. Just think what would happen in terms of how they would feel emboldened with their agenda if he's elected. Will they calculate that if they catch an African-American riding somewhere at night, traveling with his family and doing some harm, that they would not send in the Justice Department, that there would not be a vigorous investigation coming out of the federal government? Most of the time, if we have any protection, the last line of protection is the federal government. So if he put a check on the Justice Department. He doesn't have to engage in any blatantly racist policy. Or if he clamped down on the Civil Rights Division to a more extreme than what George W. Bush did, that could create a lot of problem. These guys on the local level, they can take their cues and start doing their vigilante action without any fear of check from the federal government. So he may be playing, he may be jiving, just get a vote, I don't know. Even though they have findings now that his father was deeply involved in the Ku Klux Klan, that he was actually involved in it. So, and we do know that there have been documented occasions where he have engaged in public racism by discriminating against African Americans as they attempted to rent homes or houses or purchase houses, that kind of thing. We also know that he set loose a firestorm against some young African-American males in New York when they were accused of rape.
Oh, yeah.
And they were not guilty. And even once they were found not guilty, he refused to apologize. But whether he's actually a racist or not is immaterial. He's stimulating latent racist forces in the country, and they're getting ready to do some damage. And if one drop of blood is shed, then that's going to be on his hand and anybody who supports him.
Mm. So let's say, hypothetically, if Hillary Clinton does get elected and Donald Trump does not, do you see any of this going away? And if so, do you see it going away, this rhetoric, do you see it going away quietly? And I have a kind of like a follow-up question to that. Being that Donald Trump is a part of the Republican Party, do you think that the Republican Party can recover from his nomination? Because it's looking pretty rough. It's serious inner turmoil within the Republican Party. I mean, you don't have to be a Washington insider to realize that a lot of people are not really feeling what's going on within their politics. So
that's a very good point, young man. Like I told you, you are a thinker, and just between you and I and the gatepost, we look to you for another generation of leadership from the ranks of our community, and I make do all that you fulfill your obvious potential. But to answer your first question, when Hillary Clinton went, a lot of these people who I would like to see help, but they're going to have to abandon white supremacy forever and come to the human table in America, even Stevens with all the other sons and daughters of Adam. That has to happen. The day of white supremacy in their ranks is over. It should have been over. So what's going to happen is that they're not going to get aggressive. You may have a few, but the majority are going to be depressed, just like any other group of people who want something and lose in a big way, if that indeed happens. And how are they going to react to the depression? You can see it now. In many of these counties that support Trump, a lot of the people are addicted with opioids, and I would predict if they have to face the fact again that those days are over, they're just gonna double down and cover up their pain in more aggressive pursuits of opioids. That's unfortunate, but I would venture to guess if they're turning back and they don't see any hope again of ever being able to bring back the old aching for days of white supremacy and white dominance, especially these old Caucasian males who have family, a family network, a network of friends, and they all share these values in places, very intense in places like West Virginia and other places around the country. As a man who believe in the human being, I hate to see them in that state. But the only way they can solve that problem is to come to the, as I said earlier, the neighborhood, the table of brotherhood in America, and work along with all these ethnicities to make this country a better place. To your second question, the Republican Party is teetering on the brink. If these poll numbers that are emerging lately, if they stay constant, then it's possible that the Republican Party can lose the Senate. They may not lose the House, but with the skilled political players in the Democratic Party, they can put together a plan to gradually take the House in 2018 and in 2020. And when they take the House in 2020, they can come up with a plan to redistrict all these overly gerrymandered districts that make it very difficult to defeat a Republican House member. And if that happens, then the whole part of Lincoln is going to be just about finished. But they may have brought it on themselves, because Donald Trump just did not rise up out of the blue. Ever since former President Nixon, this Southern strategy that he adopted with large numbers of disenchanted whites who were angry because of the civil rights legislation in the 60s, abandoned the Democratic Party for the Republican Party, and their prime motive really was not willing to give up their racial privilege in the South, many of them. And the Republicans played on that over the years to a certain extent, but it's Donald Trump who's brought those energies and those attitudes to a head and a ball, and we can see them clearly now.
So do you believe that the Republicans don't know it, but they probably have already lost because of the perspective that they've taken on, or the platform that they have taken with Donald Trump? So do you believe that they don't know it, but even if he does win, they probably already have lost the House, or the House of Representatives, or the Senate, because there are some highly contested seats. Like Senator John McCain out of Arizona is in a really close fight right now for his Senate seat. And then Mark Kirk from Illinois is a senator out of Illinois. He's in a pretty close battle right now. So do you believe that we will see a flip inevitably because of their platform?
I think there's contradiction in what the Republicans normally all about. For instance, Republicans are known for free trade. Donald Trump trying to piggyback off of what he think was the result in the Brexit movement and the United Kingdom, Great Britain, is taking a stance that really is not reflected in his life. He makes all of his items that he make money off overseas in one form or another. His furniture, his ties, his shirts, all of them are made overseas with cheap labor. So he has no concern really about the average working person who's without a manufacturing job. If he did, he would create manufacturing plants and manufacture those items right here in America. I don't know if you're aware, but 51% of the Republicans say that they don't want him as their nominee. Only 48% now, and this has been brought out in two or three polls, would like to see him as the nominee. There are forces gathering that's going to attempt to dump him at the convention. That attempt may be difficult. It probably won't happen. If they fail, the people who want to dump him, most of them are going to go home and sit out the election or vote for Gary Johnson on a third-party ticket. If they are successful, then Donald Trump and his forces will pitch a hissy fit and disrupt whoever replaced him, and that person would have a snowball chance in Hades to win in November. So they're in a catch-22. Really, they done if they do, and they done if they don't. But the party's really split down the line in terms of whether or not they should fervently support their presumptive nominee.
Yeah, I agree, because you have a lot of Republican, you know, staples, like, you know, well, I mean, this person I'm getting ready to mention, former President George W. Bush, you know, he hasn't really been vocal about the campaign as much. But, I mean, again, you don't have to be a Washington insider or a rocket scientist to realize that the Bushes are pretty, you know, are not happy with the way their party is going, because for almost 20 years it's been their party, and now it has suddenly underwent this serious, you know, shift. And you also have other Republican staples like, you know, Christy Todd Whitman, all people like that, you know, who are just saying, like, you know, I don't like the way the party is going. And then you have other Republicans, you know, big Republican figures as well, like, you know, former Vice President Dan Quayle, who is now supporting Donald Trump. So it's definitely a catch-22. It's definitely a rift. But on to my next question, on to the left now. There is a growing divide, I believe, within the Democratic Party. It's not as huge as the divide within the Republican Party, but there is a growing divide between the center left and the more progressive left with the Democrats. So in other words, you have the Bernie Sanders supporters who are not very happy with the way the election went. And you have the Hillary Clinton supporters who are staunch supporters and who almost look down upon the usually more younger progressive left, you know, and say, oh, they're just, you know, they're going to hop on board. And then, you know, the hard left is like, I'm not going to hop on board with the secretary. You know, I'm not into her policies. I'm not into anything she's really saying. So there's a growing divide between the progressive left and the center left. Now, Secretary Clinton could say she's progressive all she wants, and she has supported many progressive policies. She's been, you know, if you look at it, a lot of her policies have been, you know, pretty progressive. But there is a growing divide. Can you tell me that this divide will it lessen? Will it grow bigger, or will it stay the same? Do you see the divide growing bigger?
Let me say this first of all. We have to be clear thinkers. We just said divide in the Republican Party and divide in the Democratic Party. What Hillary Clinton facing is not what Donald Trump is facing. What do I mean by that? The people who refuse to support Trump, they're doing it on basically moral-type principle grounds. I'm not a racist. I don't support a racist. I'm not one who believes in torture. I don't support a torturer. I'm not one who believes in calling a federal judge out because of his Mexican heritage. On and on and on and on and on and on and on. I'm not one who want to support a demagogue. In the case of Hillary Clinton, nobody is charging her with any of that. The question is, how left do we want to go in terms of policy prescription? Now, you can go left all you want to, but the bottom line is that within the context of the American electoral system, you're not going to get elected going too far left. And Hillary Clinton is not going to blow her chances behind a far leftist agenda that even if she tried to implement it, does not have a snowball chance in Hades to get through a Republican House of Representatives. It's just not going to happen. Electoral politics does not reward the extreme. It never has, and it never will. Now, after having said that, the forces in the Democratic Party, President Barack Hussein Obama, Senator Elizabeth Warren, both Clinton, the past president and the future president, they know that they have more flexibility now given the current climate in the country to go somewhat left in terms of policy. For instance, we deal with the PACs. Initially, Senator Clinton was supporting an increase in the hourly wage. I think it was about 12-something. Today, it's been publicized that the Democratic Party is pushing $15 an hour. That's something out of Bernie Sanders' page book. But that does not threaten Senator Clinton's electability by moving left a little bit with that particular provision. So some things they can accommodate and will accommodate, but they're not going to blow their mainstream victory going way out on a left field limb. That's not going to happen.
Right, which is a bit of her problem right now regarding a lot of the Sanders supporters is that because she knows that she will not be able to get elected on a extremely progressive campaign, she is a bit, you know, she's stuck in a bit of a conundrum right now. You know,
stuck in a conundrum if you really think about it. Are the Sanders supporters, are they going to be stuck in a position where conservative Republicans who totally reject their agenda, taking a stand on conscience and refusing to allow Trump to become the president of these United States, and these quote-unquote progressive people, which in my opinion would not be progressive if they sit back and allow a racist, a Muslim hater, anti-women, and everything else kind of person become president. I don't know what you call them, but I wouldn't call them progressive. I call them somewhat cynical, deluded, unrealistic socialists, which have no concern about any other issue other than their narrow economic fantasies. Because what are you going to do? Are you going to vote for Trump? Are you going to sit back and allow the American government to go in his hands simply because you can't realize everything in the platform that you fantasize about, but totally unrealistic in terms of happening within the realities of the American governmental structure? So the ball is in their court, not Hillary's. I believe she's probably going to win without him.
Well, it's statements like that, Brother Imam, that have really, really turned off a lot of the Sanders supporters. There you go right there. You just said it. You know, I mean, I can't repeat everything you just said. It's statements like that as to why a lot of the Sanders supporters don't want to support the secretary. It's not because of the fact that they realize that in America you have to come a little bit further to the center in order to move the agenda, you know, further into a further progressive area. However, it is the tone that a lot of the Clinton supporters have taken is the tone that – the undertone, rather, that the secretary – that many of the secretary herself have taken – that have turned off a lot of the Sanders supporters. And
let them get turned off.
Talking about this right
now. Let me make the statement.
You ain't
still
talking about it. Just proves the further rift that's happening. Let me make the point,
young man. Cool it. Do you remember the closeness of the election between President Barack Hussein Obama and Senator Hillary Clinton? Did she try to make him adopt everything she wanted and had him under the gun? If you don't adopt it, then we're not going to support it. That's not the American political game. You run, you present your agenda. Then, if another person wins, you don't hold them on the gun saying, look, if you don't adopt my agenda, then I'm going to take my ball and run. That's not the game. A strong political leader say, okay, I'll work with you, but I'm not going to allow you to intimidate me, threaten me, that, okay, give me everything I want. Otherwise, I'm going to leave. A strong politician takes the position, look, okay, I'm willing to work with you. I'm willing to compromise. But if that's your position, let me run my race. I'd rather take my chances losing.
Right.
That's the game.
Sanders lost the primary. Right.
He lost the primary.
He lost California. But the Again, I have to say, Hillary Clinton she's a thoroughbred, she's a seasoned political vet. She's not new
to
any of this. Right, so she understands what to do. When President Obama, the secretary in 2008, she definitely was, she felt like it was her turn, but again, you had this political force like the President Barack Obama, this 1,000-watt personality, this megaton force, that really, beat her in the primary. And so the secretary being a really good politician she is, well, I wouldn't say really good, but just being a pure politician, sucked it up and told her supporters to put all their support behind President Obama. But again, that was 2008. It's 2016 now. And
it doesn't matter, we have rules of the game, and nobody has a right.
These are two different candidates that are going up against each other. You have a more activist in the senator who has himself, like a politician, that said, I'm going to vote for the secretary. I'm going to vote for her. But it is up to my supporters to vote for her. And, I mean, I don't know what else to say. It is the tone that the Clinton campaign is taking.
Well,
I mean, the internet plays the biggest part that it did in 2008, where a lot of the Clinton supporters are talking to, they're on YouTube and they're on other social media outlets, and they're saying, oh, well, the Sanders campaign, all the Sanders supporters need to suck it up. And they might have a point. They might be true about this, but it's the very fact that they are saying this that is turning supporters off. You didn't have to tell an Obama supporter in 2008 was not telling the Clinton supporters suck it up. They just let it happen because they were so infatuated with Obama.
You must be a Sanders supporter. Look, it's the Sanders people that's saying Bernie Bernie, who's saying, if we don't get Bernie, we won't support anybody. That's not the attitude of electoral politics. So they have a problem more so than anybody with their tone. Okay,
well, a lot of the Sanders supporters have won the primary. A lot of the Sanders supporters have bought into the idea that the fix was in, and they've complained about the results in New York, and a lot of people say, well, what do you mean you complain about the results in New York? She lost fair and square. Well, you have things such as the open primary, you have things such as the closed primary and the open primary and this primary and that primary, and results that have completely turned off the Sanders campaign. And on the flip side of that,
and Clinton was a lot closer to Obama. She could have said that the system is rigged. She could have said that Obama beat her mostly a lot of times in caucus state and not in the primary. She could have said, I actually beat him in New York and in California, two of the biggest Democratic states. People can use political rhetoric all day long, but the bottom line, there's a such thing as a dignified loser and a soul loser. Politics doesn't change that. You can be a soul loser in sports. You can be a soul loser in any human activity. Hillary Clinton had a better case to make that she was robbed in terms of her closeness, in terms of numbers, delegates, and everything else to President Barack Hussein Obama. I don't remember one time after he became the Democratic presumptive nominee where her or any of her supporters would run around the country talking about the election was stolen. It just didn't happen.
Well, again, now that we kind of have addressed this, I'm going to bring up a fact, and it is a fact, and I don't think any Hillary Clinton supporter can deny it. Hillary Clinton's likability ratings have always been in the dumps, right? She's always had a likability problem. Now she's gotten better with it over time, and in 2016 she improved it, but still, her likability rating is not as good as a lot of the other candidates in the race, such as Senator Sanders, or even in 08 is President in 08 with President Obama, who had great likability ratings. So, if we're going to talk If we're going to talk facts regarding how I'm saying that, you know, I'm not shooting out the hip now. I'm saying a fact. She has a likability problem. She's going to have a hard time getting Sanders supporters to support her. It's in the proof is in the pudding. Statistically, poll wise, the woman has likability with popularity. Even going back to 2008, where they asked her questions, she said, "Well, that hurts my feelings." Statements like that have always hurt her. So she has a likability problem. People simply don't like her.
She's running against Donald Trump. Donald Trump's likability numbers are higher than any candidate in the history of America. So she's not
correct. We're talking about the rift on the Democratic side right now. And the fact of the matter is that people still are very aware of that likability problem that she has. Listen. And it's part of the reason why I'm not sure what will happen regarding the play out with the Sanders supporters, whether they'll stay home or not. But I have to tell you, there are a lot of Sanders supporters who are saying they're going to stay home. Some might suck it up and vote for Hillary Clinton because, you know, that's how our system works. Well, people are saying, I'm not going to waste my vote.
Donald Trump being president of the United States, that's sucking it up. Problems in America. You mean to tell me it's a big deal that they decide, well, hey, I'm going to vote for the lesser of two evils as opposed to Donald Trump? Secondly, let me say this in that regard. Why does she have a likability problem? Now, let me give you some facts. The right-wing machine in this country has been slandering and defaming Hillary Clinton, Senator Clinton, for over 30 years, okay? We can give a recent example in Benghazi. They raised maybe 5 or 6 years of sand. Listen to me now on Benghazi. Making movies about it, turning all these people against her, making it seem like she was responsible for poor Americans dying, even though President Obama was the president and it happened on his watch. And so the American people, many of them believe that. But when the deal went down the other day, they said we actually have no smoking gun or anything to blame her about with Benghazi. Now, that's a fact. So a lot of this lack of favorability is because the Republican white wing machine, they did a very effective job of obtaining her over the years. Now, when it comes to these various factors, like abilities, other factors, what really matter is whether the person vote for you. Now, if you look at these polls, the Bernie Sanders supporters now are not telling these people that they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton. Nevertheless, in these polls, she has a large gap over Trump. So what's the point? It's still enough folk out there, even though they're not saying that we right now that we're going to support her. If a polls are calling, I'm sure they're not saying I'm voting for her. But the facts are is that she's leading big time now, and he barely gets over 40%, if that, and she gets 45 and above. These are the facts.
Right.
They can stay home if they want to, but it's a very legitimate political question. And I'm going to say this, I know politics. The majority of his supporters are not going to stay home. You're going to have
majority of the
Sanders supporters, I guarantee you're not going to stay home.
It may be
entrenched, substantial minority who do, but they're not going to stop her from being able to win this election.
Right. Well, I'm going to say this as well. This election is not going to be decided by the Sanders supporters. Now, whatever you want to say, may stay home. This election, I don't know whether you're inferring that a lot of the Sanders supporters are not saying that they're going to support her, which they might be, but this election is not going to, I don't think it's going to be decided by those people. This election is going to be decided by the independents, the 8% of the people who are either turned off by Donald Trump or who are not turned off by Donald Trump. So, inferring that a lot of the Sanders supporters aren't saying that they are going to support her, which they might be doing. Some people are, of course, with who they're going to vote for. A lot of people are like that within this country. But it's not going to be decided by them. It's going to be decided by the 8%, the 9% of these people, the independent voters, the swing voters in these swing states who are maybe repulsed by Hillary Clinton because they simply don't like her because of all the, you know, the right-wing attacks or whatever you want to call it. They may pick the lesser of two evils and might just simply vote for Hillary Clinton. So whatever you want to say about it, it's still definitely an increasing divide. People are pretty upset about, you know, just the way the primary went regarding election. I mean, even Donald Trump tapped into it with the, you know, when he was like, oh, Sanders supporters, you know, come over to the Trump side, and a lot of the Sanders supporters were, you know, simply saying, well, I refuse to do it. So, you know.
Man, that was a joke. Well, you think any of those Sanders supporters would listen to that that foolishness going over to Donald Trump? The truth of the matter is, when the rules in the Republican primary worked for Trump, he was down with it. When the rules everything is rigged. We are all mature political people. When you sign up to run for a race, your team should check out every state where there's an open primary, where there's a caucus state as opposed to a primary. And you assess all of that, and you say, look, I'm willing to take on the challenge. These are the rules, and I'm going in this thing to win. If I win, I'm going in with notice, due process. Nobody is surprising me. All this is open. So if I lose, it has nothing to do with the rules. It has nothing to do with the process. It has to do with the fact that the other party got more votes laboring under the same rules.
Right, well, again, we know that the secretary, well, I mean, you know a lot about politics and probably have been around politics longer than I am, but we both know that the secretary left the position of Secretary of State anyway to begin launching her campaign for the 2016 election. I mean, Senator Sanders just probably figured out that he wanted to run for president, I mean, what, max 2 years before? So I think definitely so it was more of a just a more spontaneous election startup than the Clinton campaign, who was probably working for the presidency, I mean, years down the line. But anyway, just moving, just segueing, you know, out of the...
Okay, let me comment on that, young man. It's a very good analysis, but it begs the question. I don't disagree with your assessment, but should we take on a large-scale venture and expect to be successful bidding for the nomination of a major U.S. political party? That's a venture that's not given to spontaneity, especially when you're running against a well-oiled political machine, as the Clintons is known to be. Now, you could do that in the Republican Party because, as you said earlier, they're in complete disarray. They had 17 people running. It was chaos. So you could do that. But when you just got basically two candidates, one of them well organized. Look at the situation with Donald Trump now. He doesn't have any players in the field all around the country, boots on the ground. He doesn't have a lot of fundraising. Sent a letter over to political figures in Britain and in other countries soliciting campaign donations. That's illegal. But he has to do
it.
Yeah,
it's against
because he doesn't have any money. So my point is the lack of organization that he had and got away with in the Republican primary is catching up with him now. So, hey, Donald Trump, I never vote for him, but he's a presumptive nominee. He won the election. He got the most votes, and that's the bottom line there. And for that reason, I don't go for a dump Trump movement in Cleveland. I don't think that's right. He got the votes. He won it. And so he's a nominee. They're going to have to live or die with him. Same thing with the Democrats. They're going to have to live or die with Secretary Clinton.
Right. Well, we have a couple minutes left in the show, a couple more minutes. Tell us where do you see the election going? Do you see a landslide? Do you see a very close election? Do you see where do you see the election going, and where do you see where would the American political climate, when will it dust settle, and how will it look after the election?
Well, let me say this. This is a highly polarized nation. Anybody that's looking for a super landslide, they're not going to be rewarded with that expectation. We look at President Obama. He never won by more than 5% of the popular vote. In this polarized country, a 5% victory is big. Now, whether 5% or 10%, everything depends upon whether those four or five senators in the Republican Party are going to be knocked off. If so, they're going to have to abandon the obstruction strategy that they had with President Barack Hussein Obama. And they're going to have to play ball a little bit with President Clinton and many things that they have sabotaged. For instance, like the Republican concept of a public infrastructure bill. They're not going to be able to stall that for eight more years. They're going to have to vote on that and pass that. And believe me, that would be a big step in changing the economic climate in this country. Just that first step alone, passing an infrastructure bill, a robust, big infrastructure bill, the first 100 days would do wonders for this country economy. And once you take that step, it's going to take off from there. I'm looking basically for a political renaissance that should have happened under President Barack Hussein Obama, but because of his Jackie Robinson pioneering status, he was not able to do that. But I see continuity in what he did linked to what Secretary Clinton is going to do if elected, because nothing is guaranteed in politics. So to answer your question, I see blue skies politically in America if these reactionary forces are turned back. And for a young man like yourself, it ought to be a good climate for you to enter adulthood and make rapid progress in any field as long as you keep your head on straight. So that's basically my assessment, my brother.
So blue skies, the forecast reads blue skies ahead for the American political climate. Now, one last question, because we got maybe like three more minutes left in the program. Do you believe the secretary, if elected, which, I mean, I believe I believe personally it's a high probability she will get elected. I don't think the country is, I have faith in the American people that they'll elect somebody with some sense, actually a lot of sense. But do you believe that if she is elected, if the secretary is elected, do you believe that she will get two terms, or do you believe she'll be a one-termer? Because it's hard as it is. We both know political-wise, it's hard to repeat in the Democratic Party. You know, it's hard to get a repeat administration. I mean, Bush did it after Reagan, but he did not get elected on the second round because, you know, he went up against someone like, you know, a rock star like figure in Bill Clinton. So do you believe that he will, that she will get the second term, or will you believe that, you know, she, you know, it's not likely?
Let's look at what you said. The Republican Party is in disarray. Are they going to be able to recover from that after the election? Something tell me that that's not going to be the case. Normally with correctly operating Republican Party, it could be difficult given our age. But we're going to see, I believe, a domino effect. In every term now, the demographics are going to get browner and browner and browner. It wouldn't surprise me that in her second term, if she don't have a Latino vice president in the first term, that she may select one in the second term. Let's look at the years. 8 years from now is 2024. Can you imagine the state of the demographics at that point? And so it's going to be very, very difficult unless the Republican Party changes tune and stop relying on older white folk as their base. It's just not enough of them in the future to put them in the presidency, I don't think. Anything can happen in politics. So my point is, in 2020, the demographics browner. In 2024, it's browner. Unless the Republican Party gets their act together, it wouldn't be surprised if she do too, and the Democrat after that, probably an African-American or a Latino, maybe the first Latino president, they'll get two as well. The Republican Party is in that kind of crisis. They need to double down, get themselves together, because in this country we need at least two halfway strong political parties for this democracy to function the way it should.
Right. Yeah, so I agree with that assessment, definitely. The demographics within this country are changing. I mean, even over here in New Jersey, we have I believe an Indian who has won the primary for Congress and is going to go up against a guy, I don't know the district exactly, but he's going to go up against a Republican, Leonard Lentz, who is, I mean, of course, a white male, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm just saying it's a prime example of how the demographics within this country are shifting. I mean, he ran the Indian primary winner. He ran pretty much, uncontested. He got the seat, and now he's, getting ready to, have a showdown with the guy in November. So I think it definitely speaks to the growing changes within this country. And I think they are more in favor of minorities now more than ever. I mean, hey, maybe in the future minorities won't be able to say, hey, we don't have this, because now things are really starting to look on the up and up for a lot of the minorities within this country who are becoming majorities. So
No doubt about it. You did right. One little minor caveat. See, that's the legacy of Donald Trump. Those people like East Indians, they had a certain segment that was Republican, certain segment that was Democrats, Asian American, Latinos, on and on and on. Nikki Haley is a Republican governor of South Carolina. But what Trump has done with his attacks against all these various people, he's driven them all now toward the Democrats.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like civil rights legislation drove the Southern Caucasian toward the Republican Party. They were Democrats. So it may be a generation before these people, my friends, swing back and go back in the Republican Party in any kind of significant numbers.
Right, yeah, I mean, I remember, I don't remember, I wasn't around, but history tells us, people like, Strom Thurmond, who was a Democrat, it caused that mass with the Civil Rights Act and all those bills that passed, it caused a mass migration of, white Southern Democrats over to the Republican Party, and, here we are today. So it'll be interesting to see where politics are in the next 8 years, particularly in the United States. Britain is a whole other story, but that's a whole other electorate. But here in the United States, it's going to be very, 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 very different. And I agree that if the Republican Party doesn't get their act together and start really going, in the Nation of Islam needs to say go fishing. If they don't go fishing, I mean, they could potentially have a problem. And once again, this country cannot work without two parties or more, having a say in the political process. So with that being said, I'm going to conclude this episode of Religion Means Alive. We'll be on the air at 7 o'clock on Saturday on a dot, hopefully without any roadblocks. So peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You listen once again to another episode of Religion Means Alive. We'll see you at 7.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.